Those of you who want the coordinates of this buried object, I've sent them up to Sean, and he's going to post them right underneath that buried UFO picture on the coasttocoastam.com website. So it'll be up there. The coordinates will be there, and you can go map away and take a look at this thing. We'll be back in a moment. We'll continue with phone calls. Linda Moulton Howe will stick around as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Linda, you have in your career indeed covered high strangeness stories. Is there any specific one of everything you've covered? Crop formations, chupacabra searches, UFOs, strange things, earth changes. Is there any one that really sticks out that just baffles you?
Well, it's interesting as you asked the question, what popped into my mind was in June of 1987, I was in Peru. I was there for a month traveling on my own. And I went to what is called the Coriti Festival. It is in the kind of ancient Inca tradition of going up high in the Andes to where the glaciers are, because from their point of view, the Apu, or the god, was in the ice at the top of the Andes. And this was tied in with the Pleiades, interestingly enough. In June, when the Pleiades dropped down on the horizon for several days, they hold this festival, Coriti. It means sort of like star snow. And the tribes, Inca tribes, come from all over Peru. There can be 20,000 people there at about 22,000 feet. And I wanted to go. I wanted to experience what it would be like to be among people who were literally relating to the sky, the stars, the snow, and basically rituals of redemption. And the idea is that the Pleiades go down, and they are, from the Inca point of view, looked at as kind of the rulers and the disciplinarians for some reason. And when they're gone for those few days, then that's when they say, please wipe all of our sins free and give us a new slate to start over the year. So I was with a group. There were half a dozen of us, and we started down in Cusco at about 14,000 feet in a van, and we drove up to, probably somewhere around 16,000 feet. And the idea was we would switch over to horses, and we would take horses up the final rising up to the 22,000 feet at the Coriti Mountain. And that night, where we were camped, everybody had been in this tent where they had cooked some food and stuff, and it was warm. And the temperatures were going down, I mean, gosh, maybe 20 below at night.
Oh, that's cold.
But it, for me, that alien sky of the southern hemisphere every night, I never got tired of looking at it. I didn't care how cold it was. And we had Arctic clothes. And so I had left the tent. I was by myself outside looking at that incredible sky. And I've been staring at the Southern Cross in one direction. And sort of 90 degrees from it was what to me looked like a perfect isosceles triangle of stars in a pattern. And I remember that the only thing in my mind was just how absolutely beautiful it was, and yet how alien it was, because I was used to a northern hemisphere sky. And as I'm staring between that Southern Cross and that pattern of stars, this blast of light came out from inside of the triangle of stars, and then came another blast of light, and a third blast of light. And I realized that the three blasts of light were making a triangle inside of the triangle of stars. And I stood there sort of astonished. And at first, because I do have a mind that usually tries to go to Occam's razor, what is the simplest thing? And at first, exactly, I thought, well, maybe there's a satellite that's tumbling and reflecting weirdly. Okay. But then it happened a second time. At the second time, when there was that repeat, I thought, well, what in the world is happening here? And I yelled at the people in the tent, you got to come out here. There's lights moving in the sky. And I heard this, it's too cold. And I'm saying, no.
They were the troopers, right?
Incredible. And now this is the part that in my mind, when you ask that question, because it still is one of the most astonishing things I've ever seen in my life. If you have ever seen Walt Disney movies where they would have that pen that would paint on the earth or paint in the sky.
Between, Yeah.
Between the Southern Cross coming straight from the center of the Southern Cross, as if somebody were drawing on a ruler, it was that straight, a white, blazing white line. We're not talking about like looking at a meteor moving. I mean, like somebody drew a line from the Southern Cross right to the center of that triangle of stars.
Like a Pong game, remember?
Well, just a straight line. I mean, and it was white, and it was blazing, and it was connecting the Southern Cross in the center of that triangle where the two rounds of blasts of light had been. And at that point, I am standing, I am looking at a line drawn in the sky. I am trying to get my friends out of the tent who don't want to come out into the cold because this is absolutely, my mind cannot comprehend what is happening. And George, this stayed in the sky as a straight white line connecting the two things that I had been staring at the most. And I'm running to the tent, looking up in the sky, but I'm pulling open that tent flap. You guys have to come out here and be witness to this. And this is the weird thing, and you hear this in so many stories. I've heard this myself. As soon as some people finally started coming out of the tent, and I've been standing out there for, I don't know how many seconds. I'm going to say more than a minute.
Without
any line is up there.
Without any Russian vodka in your coat, right?
Okay. No, right. And what happens as soon as those people come out of the tent? It fades away.
Typical, right?
Yeah. Well, what in the world are these dramatic demonstrations like that?
And you know what? What if they were trying to communicate or to show you something?
Well, it was like a reflection of exactly where my attention had been. The Southern Cross and that pattern of triangle stars, and that's where all the action took place. But what could produce that kind of drama on that scale?
To the phones we go. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Blair in Sedona, Arizona.
Hi, Blair. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, sir. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hey, one of the motives could be your evidence suggests that these alien crashes were deliberately crashed in remote areas, Linda, you know, initiating what you might call and maintaining a secret technology for genetics trade with the government corporate entities that are, you know, on all of our countries. You know, basically, the thinking of this group could be, and I want you to comment on this, hey, these guys are on a precipice, you know, currently where self-annihilation may close a specific DNA chain in this universe. We better get it while it's going good.
Well, I'll tell you, I had the most interesting discussion with this Bill Foster, the one who saw this huge, huge triangle with his wife and another couple. And in asking him about having a life of what appeared to be abductions by what he thinks are these gray beings inside of this large triangle, what in the world is the purpose? He said, I really don't know. He said, I've been abducted 11 times from age 5 up to at least age 55, and I know that I've had instructions, and I know that I've had images running through my head. But Linda, I cannot tell you except when I think about that question, he said, what occurs to me is whatever is going on, they're in control. It's their agenda. They're doing the abducting of humans. We're not doing abductions of them.
Yeah, and it's sort of like a first wave of Dr. Hertak comments about, you know, watch out for these first waivers of alien beings coming down because they mean no good, but they're after something that we've got, whether we're soul containers or a special DNA. We've got something that probably trumps them, but we have to get through this period and let them do their business, but realize that we hold the ultimate, I'm using trump card, once we work with our own spiritual growth. I think that George talks about that a lot, too.
Well, there's one thing that I would say has certainly been impressed upon me over the last 26 years. When I started into this story as a hard science and environment investigative reporter, simply trying to find out what was happening to animals in Colorado and around the world, and came face to face with law enforcement and a whole bunch of people who were telling me off the record, we're dealing with creatures from outer space. Why? What could possibly be the reason? And I had to try to accommodate a lot of paradoxes and contradictions. And part of it was, as I wrote in my book, An Alien Harvest, I was really, becoming convinced that we might be dealing with a survival issue at all levels. Our survival, that whatever the entities are, they've got a survival issue, and that there is definitely not just one, that there appears to be several at least, with different agendas. And I do not think that all of the non-human intelligences seem to have any negative focus on us. If there are one or two that, let's say, are indifferent to us, because they have priorities, they have their own agendas, I think it becomes closer to that. That's my own personal opinion.
You know, I sometimes subscribe to what David Jacobs theorizes, that this is not all benevolent here.
No, it's not all benevolent from a human point of view, because there's no question that we're dealing with animal mutilations. We're dealing with a human abduction syndrome that is done against the will, or certainly not with the permission of the people. And probably one of the most disturbing pieces of the entire story has been animal mutilations. I know that I specifically have had two very focused threats from people allegedly working in our government who have said to me in two different parts of the country and two different years, we've tried to make it clear to you, we don't want animal mutilations and UFOs connected together in the public's mind, so lay off. And my attitude has always been sort of like Paul Hellyer's. I think that we, the public and the taxpayers, deserve to know everything that the government so-called servants no. And that if there is some issue in the animal mutilations that links to, let's say that there is some kind of a survival issue out there, we interpret animal mutilations to be repulsive and horrible, and a lot of animals have died. Well, what if there is a huge problem on the part of one of these life forms? We interpret it as not being positive, but maybe we are all in some kind of a huge survival boat.
Good point. Let's go to our first time caller line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Barbara from Seattle.
Hi, Barbara.
I'm demon possessed, and I had talked to your producer about doing a live exorcism, and things have gotten really erratic over here. And
what's going on with you?
He says he's not going to leave me until I'm dead and bleeding. Although I've been praying to God, and he's been helping a great deal.
How long has this been going on for you, Barbara?
He came out about 2 months ago, and he said that God said it was time for him to come out.
What state of mind were you in when you got possessed? How did this happen to you?
He said it happened when I was 9.
Ah, so it's been with you for a long time.
Yes.
Every day? Are you possessed every moment of the day?
Yes. And according to him, I didn't know he was there for years and years and years, but I've been saying things that I didn't mean. And
were you a particularly mean kid?
Yes, a little bit, yeah.
What's the worst thing you've ever done?
Worst thing I ever did is I had this tendency to sort of stare someone down and find their weak point and just rip them.
Like what? Give me an example.
It's really hard to say. It's just somebody has a weak point.
Okay, you mean like in their personality, some kind of flaw?
No, something they're very sensitive about. Something that would really hurt them.
Okay, so let's assume you're at a party and there's another woman there and she's got a problem with maybe the way she looks. You would spot that somehow from her and go right at that?
He would and go right at that.
He would.
And I would wonder why I said that. But he, like, if she was fat, he might say just something really cruel, something that would go into her psyche.
And what would this person do to you when you would say something like that, or he would say that?
What, the other person?
Yeah, I mean, would they attack you, cry, go away?
All of the above.
Okay, so for all these years then, this evil creature has been in you, and have you sought out any specific help? And I don't mean from God. I mean from some kind of exorcist or something like that.
I did recently. The Catholics are very difficult to get through their whole screening process.
Sure.
And I have called your program because you seem to know a lot of the exorcists. And they did talk about an on-air exorcism, but if you could pass my number along.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll put you on hold. Put her on hold there, Karis, and Tom will get your number, and we will most likely get back to you with some kind of information. That's a strange one, Linda.
Yeah. I don't know. We're out of my field.
Oh, yeah. You're not into the exorcisms.
Nope.
Though I believe in your career, I bet you've come across some pretty bizarre entity stories, haven't you?
No, I would say that most of all of the stuff that I've investigated has always been focused on hard physical. And interestingly, one of the first people I went to in the animal mutilation investigation, which is highly physical, was a Catholic priest who did exorcisms in Denver. And when he took a look at the photographs and the evidence of the animal mutilations, he says, this has absolutely nothing to do with satanic cults or exorcism.
Interesting. Interesting indeed. Well, Linda, we're going to take some more calls when we come back. Give us some more information about your website. A lot of people brand new to Coast to Coast, they come on by the thousands.
Right.
Go ahead.
It's www.earthfiles.com. Think of a reporter filing files about the earth, Earth Files. And my focus is environment, science, and real X-Files, grounded as much as I can make them in hard physical evidence, eyewitness testimony. And this world and this universe that we're in, I think, is fascinating to explore. It should not be put in some kind of policy of denial in the interest of national security. I think it affects us all, and that's what I'm trying to do at Earth Files, is report straightforwardly about what you don't see often on the 6 o'clock news.
All right, stay with us. Linda Moulton Howe and the rest of your phone calls, and I will be right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Sean has those coordinates posted of this buried UFO or whatever it may be on the coasttocoastam.com website. So go up there, take a look at that. By the way, you're going to need a map to keep track of me in the next few weeks. I'll be in St. Louis for some of the shows next week. Then I go to Los Angeles to do a program, a Coast to Coast show, of course. Then I come back to St. Louis. And then twice a year, we do not have rating periods in our business. And those are the chances for us to get away on vacation. And there's one around Independence Day, and there's another one around the Christmas period. So I'm going to be taking my vacation sometime this month, and then I'll be coming back to get you into the new year. Art will be doing a special predictions show, by the way, at the end of this month. So lots going on here on Coast to Coast AM. I'll be back in a moment with Linda Moulton Howe and the rest of your final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Linda, any more conferences ahead for you?
Starting in 2006, the first one that I would recommend a lot of Coast listeners to consider is the UFO Eureka Springs Conference. It's going to be in its 18th or 19th year, and it's held in that beautiful classic Victorian town called Eureka Springs. And there are usually 500 or so people in the audience every year. And the reason I like it and recommend it is that Lou Farish, who has been persisting with this conference, always brings together people who are working on facets of research about Earth mysteries that are not always what you've heard before. It's always something new. I always learn something there, and I'm always trying to bring a whole new research project to the Eureka Springs Conference. So if anybody is interested, I believe that all you have to do is in Google, type in the name Lou Farish, F-A-R-I-S-H, the UFO News Clipping Service. He's in Arkansas, and he does this wonderful conference every year. And that is kind of first up, always the first weekend in April.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air, and thanks for holding. Hi there.
Good morning, George, Linda.
Yeah, hello.
This is Brad from Georgetown. I'm calling. My question is, Linda said that she was there on that mound in July.
Am I correct? Lake bed in July.
Okay. How big did you say this was again?
The triangle that is in the images is 4,400 feet on the two long sides and 2,700 feet on the shorter side.
Okay, they buried it because they couldn't haul it out, correct?
Well, the story that no one's been able to prove yet, but we have the Air Force testimony that there was a vehicle that was 150 feet long and 30 feet high, that crashed right in the middle of the area that is now we'll call it the bulldozed triangle, and that the object was supposed to have been buried below the surface at what would be the center of this bulldozed triangle. One of the unanswered questions is why, if it is our government's construction project, why did they go to so much trouble to make such a huge triangle in that lake bed around where they buried something? The U.S. Air Force pilot that we heard the excerpt from says he thinks that it had to do with providing a target, perhaps for the extraterrestrials.
Well, I'm going to get to my question. It kind of strikes me funny that, you know, they couldn't haul this thing out, and they dug such a big hole, and they buried it. I just kind of wondering how they got it over into the hole to get it covered up. And
the Air Force guy and the remote viewer both saw the same thing. I mean, one says it was his eyewitness testimony. The remote viewer saw the same thing and described it, that the object coming in at 3,000 miles an hour half buried itself where it came in, and that our government only had to bulldoze out and bury another half. That is the story.
Yeah, they didn't have to move it at all.
No, and it was half buried by impact.
Let's go to our international line. Your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes. My name's Corey. I'm calling from Edmonton.
Hello, Corey. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. I'd just like to say that the government actually probably does not know about anything about EV.
I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you, Corey.
Sorry. They don't want to know about EV, extraterrestrial biological entities, because they don't want to know. It's kind of like, you know,
Who doesn't want to know?
The government. The government doesn't want to know anything. It's kind of like saying, like you're a father. The father doesn't want to know what the son is doing.
Well, but you've got to remember that if it's all true, what Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso wrote in the book The Day After Roswell, which I personally think is one of the most important books ever written in this area. He describes in many pages his own firsthand experience in the Pentagon with General Arthur Trudeau, who was a friend and colleague of Dwight D. Eisenhower, who became president, and that they were working together in a small unit for one specific reason, to learn as much as they possibly could about extraterrestrial biological entities interfacing with our planet, and that our government wanted their technology to back engineer and patent in American corporations, and they wanted to move forward as fast as possible as they could with the space program. All of that means that it was in the interest of the government to learn as much as possible, but that a decision was made to keep everything that was happening in a military, intel, and corporate level about extraterrestrials and their technology away from the public and the media, and that that policy is still in effect today. That means the governments know, at in some units, they know a tremendous amount. The issue and the challenge, which Paul Hellyer is concerned about, I am concerned about, along with a lot of other people, is what is it going to take to make our government and other governments tell us everything that they know, which I think is a tremendous amount. It is not disinterest, and it is not that they don't know. It's that there is a policy of denial in the interest of national security.
The old saying, deny, deny, deny. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there. It's your turn.
Hi, George. How are you?
Fine. Thank you.
This is Jarrell. I'm calling from Nebraska right now. Been a long-time listener, and this is the first time I've ever called you.
Jarrell is a very different name.
Yeah, actually, I've wanted to call your show before regarding my name because it came from the Rosicrucian. So
wasn't that Superman's father's name?
No, it was Jor-El, and it had a hyphen in it. Mine does not.
All right.
Linda. Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Well, your program has brought back a lot of memories for me. I grew up in West Valley, just east of where you're talking about, out there in Garrison.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to go out to the hills that are right off of State Road 201, right off on the side there. And there is a lot of very strange energy, but I've never been down all the way down that road, so I haven't seen exactly what you're talking about. But one thing I wanted to let you know, when I was, it was about 16 years ago, we used to go up to Butterfield Canyon all the time. I don't know if you've been out there. Have you heard of Butterfield Canyon?
No.
Okay, it's southeast of where you're talking about this ship is supposed to be.
Right.
There was a lot of very strange things that happened out in Butterfield Canyon. There's a lot of people that have very odd stories of things that they've seen, lights kind of disappearing. You'd be driving down a road and you'd see lights coming at you, and there would be no turnoff on the road. It's, you know, all just a stretch of road in the middle of nowhere, and these lights would look like they would go over a hill, and then they would disappear.
Right.
And no car would pass you or anything. You're like, oh, okay. But the military started to have a presence up there, and then all of a sudden it got shut down. And nobody was allowed up there anymore. I don't know if it's open now. I haven't been up there in a while, but it's directly southeast of where you're talking about.
Well, I tell you, after talking with a lot of people who have lived there for a very long time, I am convinced that that whole area, the dry lake bed and perhaps going into the canyon that you're talking about, the people have seen truly high strangeness for a very long time, but like so much of the world, unless a reporter or somebody starts going around and talking to people, none of their stories would ever reach the light of day because everyone thinks that if they talk about it, that they will be ridiculed.
You know, Linda, what is truly remarkable would be the tremendous incidence of crashes. I mean, and we're just talking about in this country.
Right.
If you added them up around this planet, it could be 100. Who knows?
and why?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if they had the technology to get here, and I still think if it's coming from interstellar space, they are coming through wormholes, because they're not coming via, you know, propulsion that we understand right now. There's no way.
And I mean, some of them might truly be planted. I've talked with people in the military who said, we know, and this is basically a quote, we know that we were, quote unquote, given technology sort of gifts that ended up being dead ends. And maybe that was the purpose, to keep humans from going in one route that might have been more successful more rapidly, diverting attention down basically dead-end technology routes. And by the time it's discovered, they've gone on to something else. What that would all be about, I don't know, but that's been suggested several times by people who have been in military and intelligence, saying we're dealing with deception, not meaning that it is hurting people specifically, but that it's putting us down dead ends. And that raises all kinds of questions about bigger agendas.
Jacques Vallée, his book, Messengers of Deception.
Right, exactly.
That's very, yep, much like that.
I keep getting emails from people who are, either something I have not said clearly. I've tried to stress that huge triangle by the statements by the actual U.S. Air Force people, and then also in the remote viewing, it was made by bulldozers or some kind of big machinery. The crash itself was by an object that was not triangular shaped and was not 4,400 feet long. The U.S. Air Force man's testimony is that he knew of an oval-shaped craft, 150 feet long by 30 feet high. If that came in 150 feet by 30 feet at 3,000 miles an hour into that lake bed, it might have gone in pretty deeply. But the big triangle is something that was constructed around that area in that lake bed. So there's two big issues. What was the purpose of doing this huge triangle? And why was it, if it's constructed in 53 or 52, why was it constructed specifically around a place that they buried this object, this aerial vehicle from outer space? There's so many mysteries about this huge triangular lake bed feature.
Is there any way in 1953 this could have been a man-made object?
Well, that's not what the remote viewer got, and it's not what that U.S. Air Force pilot or the captain.
So they saw.
Yeah, that's not. The captain said that he had firsthand knowledge from a colleague in the Defense Intelligence Agency, and that it was a craft considered to be an extraterrestrial vehicle that came down in that lake bed. And then the U.S. Air Force man that I interviewed and we had an excerpt from said that the last time he had been out there was in the early to mid-90s, and that the object was still there, but he did not know what the status was now. So the eyewitness testimony of these people doesn't prove it, but you have to put it all together and say that from the locals who have lived there for a long time, from the, we'll call them the Air Force people, the remote viewing by Joe McMonagle, which was so accurate on so many details, all of it says we're dealing with something that was not terrestrial.
What a story. Absolute story. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi there. There he is.
Texas?
Yeah, go ahead.
Last night, your guest about the Stardust, he had mentioned something about every 13,000 years that the pristine material is jettisoned out.
Yes.
I just wanted to point out, and I also have a question for your guest, that kind of coincides with the events of 10,500 BC, as far as 13,000 years. And for your guest, I just wanted to ask the story you were telling earlier about Peru and the high altitude.
Right.
Isn't that the only place on Earth where you can see the Zeta Reticulum system?
when you get into the southern hemisphere, that is the only hemisphere that you can see Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2 from. You can't see it in the northern hemisphere.
That's a good point.
For me, that was not my focus. My focus was on that southern cross in this very strange triangle of stars. And the Zeta Reticulan 1 and 2 story, I think, which keeps emerging in the internet, in all of this SERPO dialogue, takes me back to the early 1980s when Astronomy Magazine did a huge article. I mean, it was 15, 16 pages long. I still have that magazine, and it was December 1974. We're at December 2005. This was a long time ago. And they focused this 16-page article with color graphics on Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2. They called it the Zeta Reticuli incident. And they showed the star system that Betty Hill, from the Betty and Barney Hill abduction in New Hampshire in 1961, had drawn under hypnosis. They then showed the painstaking work that Marjorie Fish, an astronomer, had put together using colored beads on strings to try to look at what Betty Hill had drawn in a 3D way. And then they showed what a modern computer had generated for that particular part of our end of the solar, or of the galaxy. And the matches were extraordinary.
They were almost identical, weren't they?
Yeah. And over time, when I think how many times the binary star system, Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2, has come up, whether it was in the abduction syndrome or talking with people in the military who claimed that they had knowledge or intel or whoever, that binary star system is out there 37.5 or approximately 37 light years from our sun. And on that map...
We got the clock here, Linda.
Okay.
Gotta go.
Where Betty had drawn, she had our sun, was on that star map.
Hey, thanks, Linda. Look, I won't talk to you until probably after Christmas, so you have a wonderful Christmas.
And happy holidays to you and all our listeners.
Linda Moltenhau for Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, it'll be Ian on Saturday. I'll be here on Sunday. Until then, be safe, everyone.